over the past several days, I've seen a lot of demand and curiosity and farmaish, if I may say so, from a lot of you who want to know more about Taiwan. And you've been asking me to declutter this business. What is Taiwan? What is the issue with Taiwan? What was that thing called Taiwanese National Day on the 10th of this month? What flipped the Chinese embassy so much that they issued that bizarre note to all of the Indian media, essentially a cease and desist note that don't call Taiwan a country and don't use the expression Republic of China, don't call its leader the president, etc. This was uncharacteristic. In India, even our own government does not issue directives like that. Somebody might call you and say, boss, isko aise kar lena. Somebody may even threaten you in some places, ye theek nahi hoga. But nobody issues directives like that. So this was quite a bizarre directive, but it got issued. Now, as that happened, that directive had the effect of actually getting people's backs up. And even the MEA, our Ministry of External Affairs, when they were asked about this, they said, we don't stop Indian media from writing anything. You are free to do whatever. Not that anybody in Indian media needed the MEA's permission to write anything. But the fact is that this told you what a thin skin the Chinese have. They have a thin skin about several things, but Taiwan and Tibet are among those. Now, first of all, we must understand that India, like most countries in the world, is fully committed to a one China policy. In 1979, even when the Americans established full diplomatic relations with China, they also signed an agreement saying that they believe in one China and they believe that Taiwan is a part of China. So even as far as India is concerned, India never questions either Taiwan or Tibet being a part of China. And this has been written in several agreements between our leaders and the Chinese leaders, including a landmark one, which also led to the Chinese recognition of Sikkim having become a part of India. So that is, let's get that history out of the way. But then what is this clutter? So let me hold up this issue of Time magazine. This is the latest issue of Time magazine. Please see this. Who's this person? This person is Tsai Ing-wen. Tsai Ing-wen. And what is she described as? She is described as president of Taiwan. Now, for the Chinese, this will be a subversive act if somebody did this in China. And it will be an unfriendly act if somebody did this in another country. This is Time magazine, president of Taiwan. What that implies is that Taiwan is a country. That's what the Chinese don't want. And she has been listed among the 100 most influential people in the world. And the little piece on her has been written by a very influential, young and powerful Republican senator from Texas, Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz, as if you might remember, in 2016 Republican race, nomination race, was a runner-up. So 4 years back, in his mid-40s, he was runner-up for president. So he's a powerful senator. And he's written this little piece on Tsai Ing-wen, calling her the president. Now, what is Taiwan? If Taiwan is not a part of China, then what is it? If Taiwan is part of China, then what is it? Is Taiwan a country? If Taiwan is not a country, then what's the problem with calling its leader the president of Taiwan? Is Taiwan a country, Republic of China? So what is the difference between Republic of China and People's Republic of China? That is the one that Xi Jinping and Chinese Communist Party lead. What kind of an entity is Taiwan? Now, this is more complicated than even I had imagined as I started reading up and I started getting more readings and research thanks to my young former colleague, Srijan Shukla, who now works at ORF, Observer Research Foundation. So, when you read up all the stuff, after a while you say, ye hai kya cheez? Is it a bird? Is it an animal? Is it a fish? Is it something else? Is it all mixed up? But this is a most fascinating, and I'm using it deliberately, most fascinating, quote unquote, country in the world. It's an island. It's a small island. If you look at the size of nations, as islands go, it's not so small. It's an island the size almost exactly of our state of Kerala, about 36,000-37,000 square kilometers. It's about the same as Kerala. Its population is 2.4 crores. It is the most crowded country in the world. We know that Kerala is also very crowded, but this is the most crowded country in the world in terms of the number of people who live per square kilometer. It's also a strange island because it's very rich. It's very rich to the extent that its per capita income is this year reckoned to be close to $57,000-$58,000 per person. Now, to put that in perspective, India will be this year about $2,200, China, which is five times our size, will be about 10,500 to 11,000. And this is near 57,000-58,000. So China's per capita income is five times bigger than India's. Taiwan's per capita income is five times bigger than China's, than mainland China's. Once again, you will ask me, if you say China, then what is Taiwan? And I will come to that. It's all buzzing in my head. It's confusing me also. So I'll try and make sure that I don't get messed up. Now, once again, take other comparisons. If you go to a global ranking of nations by GDP, by per capita GDP, Taiwan is ahead of most European countries. It's ahead of UK, France, it's Sweden. It's in the same rank roughly as Australia. It's ahead of Canada. So it's a very rich country. Now, who lives there? The Chinese live there. 95% of Taiwan's population is Han Chinese. The rest are people from here and there, plus some natives. They were all sort of Polynesian island natives. And this has a checkered history. Now, what's happened there is that this year, in the fresh election, this president, this young woman, my age so young, this young woman, Tsai Ing-wen, she got re-elected president by a large majority. She got 57.1% of the vote. The other interesting thing is that she got re-elected, but she is not from the original party which in a way founded Taiwan, that is Kuomintang or the Chinese Nationalist Party. I bet you've heard that name. So she is not from Kuomintang. In fact, she is from a party that was set up in opposition to Kuomintang. Now, Taiwan has had a very interesting history, and I will not go into all of it, except tell you very briefly that in 1949, Chiang Kai-shek, General Chiang Kai-shek, and I will tell you the history before that in a nutshell. In 1949, after losing the civil war to Mao Zedong and the Communist Party, he fled from mainland China to this island called Taiwan. Taiwan until 1895 was under Chinese control under the Qing dynasty. 1895, in the first Sino-Japanese war, when the Japanese won, this island was handed over to the Japanese. It was then called Japanese Formosa. The Japanese controlled it, and the Japanese were not nice guys as colonizers, as people in that part of the world remember. Japanese were terrible, very cruel, very brutal colonizers. So they controlled this. But when the Second World War took place, where did Japan end up? Japan ended up on the losing side. Because Japan ended up on the losing side, they also ended up ceding the island of Taiwan, or Japanese Formosa, back to China anyway. Now, China's history over the 20th century is long, eventful, bloodied, interesting, fascinating, in fact, and also very important. And it's important to understand that if you want to understand the Taiwan issue. But let me also try and put it in a tight capsule for you. So think of the latter half of the 19th century. So between 1866, when a man called Sun Yat-sen is born in China, between 1866, 1869, when say in India, Mahatma Gandhi is born, 1889, when say Jawaharlal Nehru is born, 1887, when a man called Chiang Kai-shek is born in China, 93, Another man called Mao Zedong is born in China. In 1998, Zhou Enlai is born in China. So over a 30-year period, these titans were born in China and India. So they were in a way contemporaries. So I'm just using this to, as shorthand, to put you back in that time frame. Now, what's happening in China towards the end of 19th century is that the Qing dynasty is declining after a long and glorious couple of centuries. But you know, like all dynasties, it was declining. All dynasties decline at some point of time or the other. They were declining. They had lost many wars to the America, to the British and the French, called the Opium Wars. They had now lost a war to the Japanese, so they were going away. And in China, various kinds of political forces and impulses were arising. Those impulses were in fact captured by Sun Yat-sen, who was a great leader of China, somebody who even the Chinese Communist CCP today consider as a founder of modern China. Now, Sun Yat-sen set up, say around 1911, his Chinese Nationalist Party. Now, this Nationalist Party had three principles. One was democracy, one was economy, and one was nationalism. This party, like the Congress Party in India, became an umbrella party. So it had people of the left and people of the right. So people on the right were generally would be called nationalists. People of the left were people who were actually communists, very inspired by the Russian Revolution. Once again, these periods are contemporary because that is around time the Tsar has declined and there is a revolution in Russia as well, and Soviet Union is being formed. So these left leaders are inspired from there. So, but they are part of the same party. So communists as well as nationalists, they come together in a new political party called Kuomintang. Kuomintang is the language, in the local language, means nationalist party. Now, this party then took over power in China. They took over power in China and they gave the state the name Republic of China. Now, you know where Republic of China comes in. And with this, you can guess why the Chinese, the PRC government gets so irritated when Taiwan calls itself Republic of China, because they think they are harking back to that period of Sun Yat-sen, etc., etc., when Republic of China was all of the China. So this fight is not about whether Taiwan is a part of China or China is a part of Taiwan. This is more complicated and I will come to that. But let me, if I may be, maybe since I oversimplify all the time, if I may oversimplify this again using the same sort of Airtel slogan that I've used a couple of times earlier. That slogan was, Jo tera hai, wo mera hai, jo mera hai, wo tera. That was partnership. So in this case, if you look at it from the PRC point of view, Chinese Communist Party point of view, they go like, Jo mera hai, wo mera hai, jo tera hai, wo bhi mera hai. The Taiwanese position right now is, under this president, Jo tera hai, jo mera hai, wo mera hai. What this means is that you are a country, I am a country. You don't aspire to absorb me into you. I am not aspiring you to absorb you into me. Then you might say, so what's the big deal? Why should a country want to absorb the other in it? There lies the complication. So what happened was that within the Chinese Nationalist Party, Kuomintang, communists became stronger and there were ideological differences. Sun Yat-sen died in 1925. He had cancer. Cancer is a tough disease, but early 20th century, it was much tougher than now. So he died 1925, quite young. As he died, the man who rose as his successor in Kuomintang was Chiang Kai-shek. Chiang Kai-shek was a very soldierly man. Chiang Kai-shek and Zhou Enlai were both favorites of Sun Yat-sen. He had sent them both to jointly head their military academy called the Whampoa Military Academy. In fact, Mao was also a favorite of Sun Yat-sen at one point. Now, when Chiang Kai-shek came in, then this ideological difference started. In the Second World War, Chiang Kai-shek was in charge. He did fight, but he preserved a lot of his forces because he knew that once the World War ended, there was going to be a civil war between him and the communists. So civil war dutifully started. Initially, he pushed the communists away. That's when the Long March took place. I'm really collapsing a long, complex history into a few minutes. Long March took place, but then Mao and Chiang Kai-shek and all the Long Marchers, they were able to rally their forces. They had more people on their side. In that fighting, they defeated Chiang Kai-shek and his nationalist forces. In the end, they had no choice but to flee from mainland China, and they went to this island about 100 miles away from the Chinese coast called Taiwan. And as they went there, what did they call themselves? They said, we are not another country, we are China. So we are Republic of China. So they said, we are inheritors of the Republic of China that Sun Yat-sen had formed, and People Communist Party, which has now taken over mainland China, they are occupying it, and we'll go and liberate it. So Chiang Kai-shek planned over long periods to take invasionary forces to liberate all of China. So Republic of China becomes one. Now, that was a fantasy. It was never going to happen. But he said that, and in the course of time, the Western world came to his backing. And the Western world recognized him as the real China. So remember, it was Republic of China, as in Taiwan, that got the permanent seat in the UN Security Council as one of the victors of the Second World War, not PRC under communists. It's only 1971, after those secret talks between Mao and Chiang Kai-shek and Kissinger and Nixon, brokered by the Pakistanis, that the Americans agreed to give that seat to Communist China, to PRC. And today you have a situation where people of Taiwan can travel around the world on Taiwan passport. See the Taiwan passport. It has a tiny, a smaller Republic of China written on it in Chinese characters. They can travel the world, but they cannot enter the UN building carrying this passport, because if UN were to allow that, it will be a big diplomatic incident with the Chinese, with PRC, and PRC is now very powerful. So that is the big ideological issue, that if you call yourselves Republic of China, then who are we? We are China, People's Republic of China. Who the hell are you, Republic of China? That's why when the Chinese embassy says, okay, even if you cover their celebrations, don't call them Republic of China. Now, on that, further complications have come up now. The further complications are that till 1987, Taiwan continued under a martial law. So both countries, or both parts of the country, careful, both parts of the country had dictatorship. 1975, Chiang Kai-shek died. His son took over. His son then started easing up. And his son then decided that his country needed to have a Western-style democracy and have elections. And he held elections in his country and abdicated in favor of the elected government. These were the first free, open elections held in China, since we believe in one China policy officially, and I have no disagreement with our official policy. This was the first full-fledged independent election in China after 1913. So initially, as happened in India, it was the establishment party that came to power. Kuomintang came to power. But by this time, another party had been formed, that is the Democratic Progressive Party, DPP, which began to grow stronger. In the course of time, as has happened in India, Congress got defeated and BJP came in. In the course of time, DPP defeated Kuomintang and came into power. And this president is from DPP. Now, therein lies a complication. And what is the complication? The complication is that while Kuomintang still carried on with Chiang Kai-shek's utopia or dream that this was one country, it's just that jo tera hai, wo mera hai, right? Wo bhi mera hai. This party and this president don't believe in that. They believe in jo tera hai, wo tera hai, jo mera hai, wo mera hai. You stay out of my way, I stay out of your way. You are a nation, I am a nation. The Chinese, on the other hand, one, they agree that they are one nation, one China. So in 1992, there was an accord between Kuomintang and the Chinese Communist Party reasserting the one China policy. And basically saying that everything will then happen by negotiations and all that, that there'll be one China and Taiwan is a part of China. Of course, underlying message from the Taiwanese side being that we are the real China. This government is saying that bygones be bygones. That is a utopia. Forget it. It's never going to happen. We are one tiny little country. Let us be. You are one large country. Let you be. That is not acceptable to China because they see this as secession and they see this as a very important part of country breaking away. So remember, once we talked about this Chinese mindset of an Akhand China policy. So this is the most crucial element in that Akhand China policy. There, Aksai Chin they have already, so a little bit of land here and there, Arunachal doesn't matter to them. But this is important to them. Now, how does it matter to us? I will explain to you. How it matters to us is that if Taiwan continues with, say, the old Chiang Kai-shek policy, if that is the policy, then Taiwan for India is as much of trouble as People's Republic of China. Why? Because the official map of Republic of China also includes all the territories that People's Republic of China claims, which means all of the South China Sea, all of the islands there, but importantly, all of Aksai Chin, Arunachal Pradesh, and all of the other little bits of territory that China claims in the central sector, as it's called. So they think that they are inheritors of the original Chinese state. They are also inheritors of the original Chinese state's territorial claims, which are the maximalist view of the territories that China controlled under the Qing dynasty, at the peak of the glory days of the Qing dynasty. So there is the problem. But this new president now, if somehow the policy that she is pursuing goes ahead, then Taiwan has a way of distancing itself from that. So far, Taiwan has not given up its claims, inherited claims from China, from the old Republic of China, on say Arunachal Pradesh. But it's also important that almost for about 10-12 years, no official of Taiwan has repeated that claim. Now what happened? In 1979, after the Americans set up their mission in China and agreed that Taiwan is part of China, how could the Americans go on doing business with Taiwan? And how could they protect Taiwan? So then Americans found other innovative solutions. There was a Taiwan Relations Act passed by American Congress, which basically commits America to the security of Taiwan without saying so. So this is a situation of strategic ambiguity, as it's called, which means an attack on, they don't say so, they don't say that it's security of Taiwan is our responsibility, but it's implicit that an attack on Taiwanese territory will be seen as an attack on American territory. So that's where the Americans are. Jimmy Carter had started the distancing. This distancing went on for some time as America's vested interest in China grew stronger and stronger. But over the past 8-10 years, especially now under Trump, there's been a reversal of that process. So America has become much more committed and much more open about its support to Taiwan. In fact, it's now negotiating with its Congress for the export of 7 packages of cutting-edge defense technologies to Taiwan, including long-range missiles, which can hit targets inside mainland China. So, a couple of things that I think you should read here. I'm sharing a bunch of readings with you. One is this article by Chris Horton in Atlantic magazine, where he says, what is Taiwan? And he says, the headline is, Taiwan status is a geopolitical absurdity, because he says this is a strange place which America does not recognize as a country, which has an existentialist threat to its territory from its own larger territory, what it sees as is its own larger territory, that's mainland China. Also, it has its sovereign status is now being erased very rapidly by all these multinational corporations, the big global companies who want to keep their businesses in China, including Taiwanese companies. And then he goes on to mention some very interesting sidelights. For example, he says, I sit in a 7-Eleven shop and buy a cup of coffee, but the receipt, the date stamp on the receipt is not 2018 when he did it. The date stamp on the receipt is 108 because Taiwanese follow the system that they would have liked to follow if all of China was Republic of China, because 1911 is when Republic of China was founded. So history and time begins from them. So 108. So it's in this set of curious complications that this entity thrives. Amazing thing is it thrives. It's one of the richest countries in Asia, one of the richest countries in the world. Remember, it's richer than most countries in Europe. That's why it is so important strategically, economically, and politically, because in a way, the Taiwan model is a challenge to the Chinese communist model, that, you know, okay, your model has been very successful, particularly after Deng, but you have a per capita income of $10,000 and you have all the resources, this wide, huge country. I have a tiny, crowded island, but my economy on a per person basis, per capita basis is 11 times bigger than yours. So maybe the system that I have followed, which is democracy, liberalism, accepting differences of opinion, accepting a real opposition, a free press, maybe my system is better than yours. And remember what? This is the COVID season. So Taiwan is also one of those countries which now tells you, because anytime people say China has handled COVID well, the immediate answer is that is a dictatorship. They can do these things that democracies don't do. But Taiwan is a full-fledged democracy, and their handling of COVID crisis has been much better than even mainland China's. Also, although they live next door, in a year they have 3 million visitors going in and out of mainland China. And I know that you'd be curious to know if anybody in the world recognizes Taiwan as a nation. So there are 14 plus 1, 14 countries and one Holy See, or which is what we call popularly as the Vatican. So these 14 together are a population of no more than 3.5 crore. So Guatemala is the biggest, 1.7 crore, Haiti 1.1 crore, Honduras 1 crore, and then you have Paraguay, Nicaragua, Belize, St. Lucia, St. Vincent and Grenadines, Marshall Islands, Palau, Tuvalu, Nauru, and of course Vatican City or the Holy See. So this is a declining thing. So this is a complicated situation.